Jess, who joined us as well. I'm Abs Adekeya. I'm the youth pastor on staff at Encounter Church in Birmingham, overseeing a lovely group of young people alongside my invaluable volunteer team. I'm also a qualified psychotherapist specialising in cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT, which I use to support mainly 11 to 25 year olds at the Priory Wellbeing Clinic who are experiencing moderate to severe mental health difficulties. I also have the joy of delivering mental health services more recently in a local school and through my work with the church, so that's one of the ways that we're making links with that school, and I'm really deeply passionate about sharing the hope that Jesus brings to the area of mental health. So I'm absolutely delighted to be able to share with you this morning or afternoon, whenever this video comes out, can't remember, because I'm getting to put those things together, and often I do youth or I do mental health and opportunities where they overlap. And they should frequently. I absolutely adore. So I'm really praying that you're having a great day so far, that you are experiencing God at work in your teams, and that He's breathing new life into the things that you're doing, into the ministries that you steward and serve so faithfully, especially in this time of pandemic. Thank you, Tim, for giving me the cheery task of reminding us all that we are still in these unprecedented times and they're far from over. I'm actually filming this from Birmingham, where it has just been announced that we've been given increased restrictions for our social gatherings. And everyone's kind of bracing themselves for this second spike, so you guys in October will know whether or not that really materialised. And yet beyond that, what became apparent from April-May time is that there are psychological consequences to all that we're needing to do to contain the virus. I'm not going to stand here and pretend that I have all the answers, but I will share with you some of what I've observed and what some of the research is saying, as well as strategies that I think will support us all as we aim to do what is right by the young people who we serve. Many people, particularly in the church, I've heard describe this time as a period of shaking. Our cultural, economic and political structures are being shaken, but also how we do life and how we do family. I don't intend to enter into that ring of debate as to whether this is the shaking mentioned in Hebrews, or you know, whether that these are the times of wars or rumours of wars that Jesus mentioned in Matthew 24, but I will borrow the imagery of shaking, quaking. I don't know about you, but in this season my life has been shaken. And when we're being shaken, we have to make several adjustments, some large and some kind of minute, almost without noticing, in order to regain and maintain balance and survive the situation. An adjustment is hard. Many of us avoid change, like the plague, actually. No pun intended. It takes physical and mental effort to adjust, and often, kind of like a cyclist who's heading towards an obstacle in our path, we can kind of overcorrect and then we have to make several other adjustments as a result. And many of us are experiencing that, and we know that it's uncomfortable, it's kind of unsettling. And we've all had to make these adjustments, but some of us know, for some of the young people who we're journeying with or who we're trying to reach, that they've really had a time of it. They may have lost someone, maybe you have, or many people who are dear to them. They may have parents or guardians who have lost jobs or job security, or who are battling mental health difficulties or addiction or relationship breakdown or all of the above, and it's been exacerbated by this kind of isolation. They may have lost access to their friendship group. They may have been starved of some of the pillars in their routine, like team sports and drama productions, orchestra. Maybe they saw their school or youth group as refuge from their beloved but exhausting siblings, and then days or weeks into term, were sent back home again to self-isolate because of a COVID case in their year group. Constant adjustments. It doesn't take a genius to anticipate that this will have had an impact on mental health and well-being. And I'm hoping that will also shape how we see mental health and well-being. Here are some statistics from a report that's come out recently by the National Youth Agency. They've said that over 1 million young people with known needs have been amplified by the pandemic. And an estimated 2 million young people with emerging needs have been triggered or caused by the by COVID-19, with many more hidden or unforeseen consequences from the pandemic. Of particular concern in this report are the 448,000 young people from vulnerable families who are unknown to services, but many of whom will likely be known by youth workers like you and me. And so even for some of those young people who are known by services, we're aware that there are some significant vulnerabilities within the system. I'm sure, like me, many of you are so grateful for social workers. Maybe some of you are social workers, and I think you do an amazing job. But we all know that there are gaps in the system. And so I want to share an anonymous story of a young person who I've had the privilege of working with from one of my contacts. And I'm hoping that as I share this with you, you'll just get an idea of some of the blank spots that we've had. So this young person, I've anonymized, the details are changed, but let's call them Adam. Adam is age 14, and he and his 9-year-old sister were locked down with their mum in March. Their parents had recently separated, and their mum had begun dating a man that Adam didn't trust. For weeks, their mum would disappear for days at a time during lockdown, without leaving food for Adam or his sister. And when they got really hungry, Adam would take his sister to his friends' houses. They were known to services, actually. They both had child protection plans in place. And on occasion, the social workers would come and check in on them, and their mum wouldn't be home. And one night, Adam and his mum's boyfriend got into a fight, and his mum called the police on him. And Adam was removed from the house and dropped at his girlfriend's family home at 2 in the morning. Adam was 14 years old. So, you can see there that we do have a commitment to notice what's going on with some of these young people, and I'm sure many of you, like myself, are trying to work hard to even find some of them. But it's important that we continue this effort. Lee Middleton, who wrote the report on the statistics that I've been giving, she says that our commitment as a nation must be for young people to be safe and secure and treated fairly. At a time of crisis and great uncertainty, we need to support young people now to be confident in their future. All too often, their needs are unseen and their voices are unheard. And despite the valiant efforts by youth workers and youth services to innovate and adapt to the crisis, as a whole, they're only reaching 1/3 of the young people who they would normally support, and just 5% of the vulnerable young people eligible for currently attending school. Youth work provides a safe space for young people to go to, things to do, and someone to talk to who knows what's needed. Space for young people to go to, that's often what we are used to, what we've prioritised with our youth clubs and how we do ministry. But also, things to do and someone to talk to. And maybe we can start to innovate in those areas to really meet the needs of the young people who we're working with. We are not just youth workers, we're the church. We have an opportunity to introduce young people to a God who hears them, who delivers them from their troubles. Our God, who is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. So Lee Middleton, the CEO of the National Youth Agency, says at the end of her report, youth services must be enabled, empowered, and upskilled to do more, not less, to meet the immediate need of vulnerable young people and for sustained support as we emerge from the crisis. And so I really think that in response to the emerging mental health pandemic, our role as youth workers should aim to provide a sense of safety, consistency, and connection. And I say this regardless of the shape your ministry takes, the budget we've been allocated, or the availability of volunteers, young people need safety, consistency, and connection. So I'm just going to elaborate on those points, really, as I explain our response, I think, to this mental health pandemic. So first off, safety. We have to ensure that we provide safe environments. Safeguarding can easily be seen as a chore. The faff of DBSs, the inconvenience of training events. I too have been guilty of viewing it that way, and I am a safeguarding officer. But please hear me when I say this. We are all responsible for safeguarding young people, and their risk level just went up. That NYA report says that 1 million young people aged 8 to 19 have self-reported mental health issues over this period. The youth suicide rate was always too high, and it's getting higher, and self-harm has been further normalised over this season. The number of young people at risk of being exploited, threatened or abused has increased through the pandemic because they're not seen. And so what we are up against is families and children who are not accessing the same medical advice, who are not being seen by so many different services and environments that they normally would have been. Young people who are at home without a safe place or trusted person to go to for advice on subjects like sexual health and gang-related activity, and we're not predicting that that's going to improve anytime soon either. So what we need to do, we need to know what to look out for when we come across young people who will be experiencing some of these difficulties, and we need to know who to go to with our observations. So that means reading up about the signs of domestic violence and voluntarily attending extra training on how to respond if a young person reports suicidal thoughts. We can't afford to be laymen in these areas or rely on just one or two people in the team to know, because what if they're not the one who this young person goes to? We can't afford to be complacent. Young people are vulnerable. And so if they're in our care, they're vulnerable to us. They're vulnerable to our attitudes on anxiety and depression, our assumptions about self-harm or risk-taking behaviour. So we need to be and create safe spaces for them. And there are so many things that we can do to facilitate that, both spiritually and practically. So my first point in how we can really increase the safety is pray. It's not a cop-out, it's vital. Ask God to lead you to do what he would do if he were you. We need to allow him to challenge and strip away our judgmental stances, the things we choose to turn a blind eye on or we don't elevate as important. We need to ask him to help us to create and maintain healthy boundaries for them and for ourselves, even as the structures of our youth ministry have changed. We can ask God to protect the young people and guide them back to him, and ask God to keep them safe. Intercede on their behalf. It's also really important that we're able to be vulnerable. I'm sure we all know what it's like to feel as though we're the only person who struggles with this thing. Getting the attention of a waiter, praying out loud, falling asleep at night, motivation to eat a meal. So let's create environments in conversation where it's safe not to be okay all the time, because that's when someone's going to come to you about something. We all know what it's like to feel anxious. We all know what it's like to struggle to get up in the morning. Normalize conversations about not being on form, not feeling like the best version of yourself, and prepare to respond in love as young people do the same. Come equipped. Many of us love offering a game of table tennis to a young person, listening to rants about friends and teachers and exams. No offence to teachers, but they rant. It's a great privilege to be someone who is confided in, someone who offers to pray. And we should continue to offer to pray as much as we can, but we have to be careful not to dismiss people with prayer. When you pray with a young person, when you tell them that you will be praying for them, do it in faith that God really is their greatest hope. But don't force people, young people or otherwise, to wait around for God without knowing anything practical that they can do to support their own well-being. Just as you wouldn't prevent someone with a broken ankle from getting an x-ray and some crutches, don't inadvertently block a teenager who trusts you from speaking to a professional about depression or an eating disorder. I firmly believe that God can heal depression with one word and just silence anxious thoughts in a second. But he doesn't always do that. So if you haven't already, look up the specialist services available to young people in your local area. Who are the crisis teams? What are the helplines? Is there young carer support? Mind UK and Childline provide pages and pages of brilliant material for young people who are struggling in their home life or their mental health. And a brand new resource, Headstrong, was released over summer, created by Youthscape. And Youthscape have done tons of work in this area, the Self-Harm UK, and now they've got even more research and resources available for leading sessions and conversations around faith in relation to mental health as well. And then they also have this website, beheadstrong.co.uk, which young people who are over can access, and read testimonies and watch videos, some that are really light and jokey, and some that are tips about how to cope with mental health issues from other young people, as well as, you know, doctors and mental health professionals. So familiarise yourself with the resources so that you can signpost and confidently point young people in the direction of something that you trust. We're never going to have all the answers, but we are such an important resource to young people that we come into contact with. So my second point after safety is consistency. We're creatures of habit, not out of choice, but as a means of survival, because it takes too much mental effort to decide what we're going to do with every single moment of every day. But when our routines are all chucked out and we can't even pretend to know what's around the corner, what tomorrow will bring, at the very least, a sense of unease will creep in. That's the baseline anxiety that many of us will have experienced in this period. Just this uncertainty, unknown. To return to my earlier metaphor, the pandemic has brought this new level of instability to the routines that many of us once relied on. For many of our young people, school has been the only real constant in their lives since they first donned that miniature reception uniform. Despite our efforts to ensure that they build their lives on the rock, they have been taught by society to build their lives around bells, terms, and exams. They got up obscenely early, or they were dragged out of bed. They walked to the same bus stop every single day, met the same friends, had the same lunch in a 12-week block. They rolled their eyes at Miss Cooper every day, every Wednesday, every week. And in March of this year, it suddenly disappeared. The rug was pulled from underneath them. Many of them will not yet have processed it, but their trust in that system was eroded significantly, and with it, their perception of the future. Even as they have returned this term, many of them would have done it without the sure footing that they're used to. Some will have been thrown into a deluge of exams. Others will have returned with significant fear of contamination and with new compulsive behaviours that they really don't understand. Students who may have been particularly isolated may have developed social anxiety. And yet now are being placed in bubbles with people that they don't know or trust. And so if they avoid school, they're not actually back. As youth leaders, we have a real opportunity to provide a sense of consistency. I've been struck by the need to offer young people things that won't disappear with sudden changes to government guidelines, things that can be relied upon. What can you offer your young people that can't be taken away? Maybe you offer them an account to send prayer requests to that will respond on a certain day at a certain time. Maybe it's a monthly phone call. They'll know that they're going to speak to you on the 25th. Maybe you release videos or social media posts at the same time every week. Maybe your Bible study runs at the same time every week, in person or on Zoom, doesn't really matter, but every week, term time, it's on. It's not about being available all the time, it's about being consistent. Consistency is not just a safeguard against anxiety or the fear of the unknown. In fact, the risk of inconsistency is actually apathy, which is defined as a lack of interest or concern. So how does that happen? Well, you're a youth leader. Say you offer something this week and then move it to next week and then it's cancelled the week after. The result is that no one's able to build a routine around it. you've communicated that it's just not that important to you. And so it's just not that important to them. It hasn't become something that they do, it's just something that they could do. They can't rely on it, so they can't allow it to matter. Many of us are aware in youth ministry that we have the opportunity to model love and support and security to family environments where that's not necessarily worked as well as God would have liked, where children and young people have had absent fathers or mothers and they've not been able to rely on someone, and we've aimed to try and be that person to model what a secure relationship looks like. And in March, our capacity to do that really shifted. But let's build things now. We know what can change to a certain extent. Let's build things that they can rely on so that they can begin to rely on us, and then they can begin to rely on Jesus, who never changes. One of the things that I value the most about God, maybe the thing I value most about God, is that he'll never leave or forsake me. He's not going anywhere. And so for young people particularly who don't yet know Jesus like that, we can model that to them. Let's not go anywhere. So routine activity is actually vital to our mental well-being. Our minds and our bodies kind of roll from one activity to the next, and that allows our body to budget the energy that we need for the next day. So when I'm treating depressed young people in clinic, the first step is to look at their routine. Do they sleep and wake up at the same time every day? Are their mealtimes regular? Do they have periods of socialization and meaningful independent activities daily? What does their weekly schedule look like? As youth workers, we have the opportunity to contribute to a consistent and valued activity for a young person's weekly schedule. One that would be championed by a mental health professional should they ever need one. That they would be encouraged to keep in place because it's something that actually helps to hold them together. And maybe you've not thought about the youth ministry like that, but in this time, it's a real building block for young people to have. So my third point was about connection, safety, consistency, and connection. It's not just about doing stuff. Depression is usually a symptom of not getting enough enjoyment or fulfillment out of life. The things that we do should flow from who we are and what we value. So where young people have been required to just kind of fill their time doing endless, seemingly endless amounts of work for a teacher who they haven't seen in months, when before they went to intervention lessons for an exam that they didn't get to sit, when they trained for a tournament that got cancelled, raised money for an expedition that didn't go ahead, the question of what's the point gets really loud. So it's therefore really important for us as youth leaders to communicate what it is that we care about, who they are over what they do. So we know that each young person that we're working with is someone who's been created in the image of God. That means we can learn things about who God is by getting to know them. We all reflect different elements of God. There are gifts that God has placed in young people that we get to call out. And this will look different in different contexts, of course, but ask God how you can do that where you are. Pray that you'll see something in them that no one's noticed before. This definitely isn't just the role of the main youth leader, but actually everyone who comes into contact with that young person. So often, this really crucial element of youth ministry, the thing that we really value, the reason we got into youth ministry in the first place, kind of gets buried underneath all the stuff that we try to do. Well, this season, as much as none of us would have asked for it, it's an opportunity to start again. A blank slate, a new chapter. Let's make sure that we form meaningful connections with young people in a time where they will appreciate that more than anything else. Demonstrate that young people matter to you, each one. Remember things that they tell you, even if you have to write it down afterwards, and then make a conscious effort to ask them about it. And I know many of you do that. Teams are so key to this, particularly if you have a larger group. One person can't devote themselves to knowing 50 young people really well, but you can know five. So make sure that you really get to know those five. Provide opportunities for the young people to form meaningful connections with others in the group. Now that's harder where we are, and maybe some of our groups aren't able to meet in the way that we would really like. For a group that has fewer Christians in it, maybe encourage them to work on a project together, a social media campaign, something practical that they have to send each other. Maybe it's something that will support a local charity, something really important that will give them this sense of ownership over what they're doing, something with real purpose, and you can get them to work in smaller groups or pairs as they do it. Or maybe it's more of a bonding experience over a fantasy football league that they have to enter in pairs, or something that encourages them to just collaborate with each other. Of course, Bible study groups, Youth Alpha, accountability prayer teams, YouVersion Bible studies can foster this really well. But the point I'm getting at is to encourage young people to value each other. So those are just a few ideas about how we can foster safety, consistency, and connection within our youth groups in order to safeguard the mental health in the youth ministry. And like I said at the beginning, I can't pretend I know all the answers. And maybe there's things that I've touched on that are affecting you. Maybe you're realizing that actually your baseline, your mental health, has really struggled in this time. And some of the things that I've mentioned are things that you can seek out, maybe in a small group or from your actual youth team. Maybe we can actually steward the mental health of the people that we serve alongside. Ask difficult questions, talk about difficult things, put the mask down and allow ourselves to get real connection with the people who we do have the opportunity to see. Because we need it. And if what we model is disordered mental health, then it's acceptable for our young people that they just carry on. It communicates that God doesn't care about those things. And we know that He absolutely does. He created us to be whole and to journey in wholeness and fullness as we get to know Him better. And the best version of myself that I will discover in, you know, on the new earth is whole, is healed, is complete. And so we need to make sure that we communicate to young people that that is God's goal for them, and it is worth seeking out. Struggling with anything in life is hard, but struggling alone is that much harder. We need to do everything we can to remind the young people that they're not alone, and that if they are, they certainly don't need to be. And I want to say that to you as well. You are not alone. We are all experiencing this, and it will have affected us in different ways. Chemically and biologically, depression and anxiety affect people in different ways, and some people are more prone to it than others. And I mentioned depression and anxiety because those are the factors that kind of impact all the other mental health disorders. They're the baseline. And so where those things can be safeguarded against, where you can get support, please do. I'm getting support. It's really important. Difficulties with mental health can be devastating because they trap people in their own minds. It becomes all the more difficult to reach out, even harder to communicate what you're experiencing, and it can often feel entirely hopeless. And so many young people, they don't even know that they're struggling with mental health. I had a severe generalized anxiety disorder as a teenager, and I did not have a clue until I was 21 that that's what I had been experiencing. I just thought that was how life was. But at the time, I had a youth group, leaders and friends who showed up for me again and again and again. And I really think that's why I'm standing in front of you today. So guys, we care about young people. And if we really care, we need to show up again and again and again. See them, hear them, love them. Look after yourself. Model that you want to look after them. that's it. That's all I've got. So I'm really praying that that's helped you. If you've got any questions or anything about that, feel free to email me, actually, aadekeye, which is A-D-E-K-E-Y-E, at encounterchurch.uk. There are so many resources out there, again, like I've mentioned. As long as we are really honest with God, and it's something that we really want to do to support the young people, their mental health, the things that they've journeyed in this season, God will equip us to do that. And I really hope some of the tips that I've mentioned will support you. Thank you.